it takes about 90 days for a team to get off track from a strategic growth plan that they've built, unless you have something that brings them back every 90 days to revisit. So we call them quarterly priorities. If your long-term targets are the strategic goals that you need to accomplish in order to get to where you said you're going to get in the next 3 years, your short-term goals are the things that you need to focus on in the next 12 months, and your quarterly priorities are the things you need to do in the next 90 days to get you at least a fourth of the way to those short-term goals.
Welcome to Investing in the US, a podcast for real estate investors, business owners, and aspiring entrepreneurs looking to grow their wealth by investing in US real estate. I'm your host, Reid Goossens, and so far, I've acquired over $800 million worth of investments on various properties across the United States. On this podcast, I interview go-getters, risk-takers, and the best in the business to learn more about their investment journey and the cutting-edge strategies they are applying towards building a legacy. For more on growing your own wealth and by investing in the US, visit www.reidgoossens.com. Today on the show, I have the pleasure of speaking with Jeff Sandridge. Now, Jeff helps organizations and their leaders generate sustained results in the areas of strategy, innovation, profit growth, organizational effectiveness, and leadership. He is the managing director of Innovation Junkie and the managing partner of Cadron Capital Partners. Now, really pumped and excited to have him on the show today to share his incredible knowledge and insight, but there's enough of me. Let's get him out here. G'day, Jeff. Welcome to the show. How are you doing today, mate?
Hey, I'm great. How are you doing, Reid? It's great to be here, and I'm honored to speak with you and your listeners.
Well, great to have you here. I'm really interested in getting into your story, and we had a bit of a chat in the green room there, you know, about what you do, and we're going to leave that for later in the show, but, you know, we start the show like we do every show. Can you rewind the clock and tell me how you made your first ever dollar as a kid?
First dollar as a kid was cutting grass, mowing yard, third grade, I would ride my 10-speed bicycle 2 miles into town. My dad would have dropped my lawnmower at the first house that morning. I would mow 1 yard, pull the lawnmower behind the bicycle to 2 or 3 or 4 others, go home, repeat it the next day, and then he would pick up the lawnmower and bring it home at the end of that second day. Once a week.
That's awesome. talk us about your upbringing with money and your relationship. Obviously, we're going to get into what you do now, but there's a story there, right? Like, you just didn't wake up one day and said, I'm going to be an entrepreneur and I'm going to do all these cool things and invest in companies and help people think outside the status quo, which is on your website, we'll get into in a little bit. But give us a story.
Yeah. So I grew up in a very rural part of Arkansas, 1,200 people in my town, 28 people in my graduating class from my public high school. Blue collar family, first generation college student, traveled 2 hours away to the city where I live now to go to college. Thought I was going to be a finance and economics major because I had a second cousin who had sold a pig feed mill to Cargill Corporation and with the proceeds had bought a bank. And he told me to go get me a finance degree. And upon doing so, he would teach me how to be a banker. So that's what I thought I was going to do till I entered college as an undeclared major and took the only intro to finance and economics and made the only D I've ever made in my life. And so I decided I wasn't going to be a finance major. Now, interestingly, I teach finance at the graduate level in that same college, entrepreneurial finance it is. So that's kind of my upbringing. I graduated from mowing yards to working for a gas station, muffler shop, automotive service center all the way through high school. Actually purchased that business right out of college and learned a lot of lessons there. Ended up losing that business because of my ignorance in many instances and having to spend the next decade paying back the debt on that. Worked in healthcare for a number of years and then took a corporate job where I got into mergers and acquisitions and entrepreneurship, where I do entrepreneurial things within the safety net of a corporate salary. Started companies in Poland, China, Saudi Arabia, Brazil, scaled all of those companies. And then about 8 years ago, left my corporate employment to do what I do today, which is basically empower and inspire entrepreneurs and small business leaders.
And why was that? Why did you want to leave and inspire other people? Like, what was the genesis of one day, hey, you know what? Screw this. I'm going to go help others.
Well, I had been fairly active from an investment perspective, personally. I had a real estate portfolio of rental properties, both residential and commercial properties, with a partner. I had begun in 2010 investing in some local businesses, and some of which I still own today. I have a three-location insurance group that I acquired in 2010 and several other businesses since that time. And in 2013, I was chair of the local Chamber of Commerce. So we're a community of about 70,000 outside of Little Rock, our capital city. And so I was chairing the Chamber of Commerce and doing some research on what is it that spurs startup activity in communities? What's the ideal startup community? And I saw that we had all the makings of being an ideal community: three institutions of higher education, two very large technology employers, a very educated workforce, yet we weren't spinning out much startup activity. So I put a group together as chair of the chamber to study that issue. We ultimately ended up creating a venture fund called Cadran Capital Partners, which is the fund that I serve as one of the GPs of today, and ended up launching the entrepreneurship initiative in 2016. And at that time, it was almost exactly on my 50th birthday. And I said, I'd spent the first half of my life making a living. I want to spend the second half making more of a difference. And so
that's awesome. That's awesome. And that's all around Innovation Junkie, right? The brand.
That's all around Innovation Junkie, Startup Junkie. So we work both with entrepreneurs and aspiring entrepreneurs from an idea stage all the way up to about $5 million through a business model that's sponsored by third-party sources of funding. And then Innovation Junkie is billable consulting with companies that don't really qualify for that sponsored consulting.
Talk to me about the first one. Who's your ideal, I don't want to say client, student maybe?
They're clients. We consider them clients. Yeah. We are a consulting firm. Startup Junkie Conductor is, but we're doing it with dollars that are being provided through contracts with the U.S. Small Business Administration, the Arkansas Economic Development Commission, and a variety of other sources. And so we consider them clients. We treat them like clients. And, you know, ideally, our best clients are tech-enabled or knowledge-based entrepreneurs.
Why do you think, rather than the small insurance group that you bought, it sounds like you still own today, why is tech the route?
But let me preface that by saying we don't turn anybody away, but our funding that comes from the Small Business Administration and Arkansas Economic Development Commission and others, they provide that funding because they have a vested interest in creating high-wage jobs.
Gotcha.
And so jobs, the growing the economy through entrepreneurship, and high wage jobs are generally considered 150% of the average wage within a particular geography.
Gotcha.
So, like I said, we don't turn anybody away, but the ideal clients that we really go after with our accelerator and some of our other programming are tech-enabled and knowledge-based industries.
It nearly sounds like you're a little incubator, if that would...
We do have an incubator. Well, we do have an incubator right up the road here. It's 11,500 square feet, and we have about 150 members who operate out of that run an accelerator, a 14-week accelerator that's actually kicking off next week. We are somewhat of an incubator.
Gotcha. Talk to me a little bit more about, I mentioned in the introduction, you're looking to help generate leaders in strategy, innovation, profit growth, organizational effectiveness, and leadership. Like, what are you doing? What's the special sauce here when someone comes in and say, Jeff, I want you to help me with this idea. How do we go and have an impact not only in the human, but also or the organization, but also in the surrounding community?
Sure. Yeah. So we have two elements to our secret sauce, maybe two ingredients to our secret sauce. One is a strategic growth assessment that we've created called the Growth DX. It's software driven. GrowthDX.ai is where it's located. Effectively it allows a senior leadership team, the CEO and whomever he or she chooses. We suggest it's the top 5 to 10 leaders within an organization to assess the company against about 75 different best practices. And those best practices are spread across 7 different diagnostic domains, from revenue velocity to organizational effectiveness, operational effectiveness, leadership effectiveness, innovation readiness, digital and data readiness, and financial disciplines. And once they complete that assessment, that serves as the diagnostic, so to speak. And from that, we then sit down and we help them create a strategic growth plan that is focused over the course of the next 3 to 5 years, usually 3 years, that is informed by that Growth DX. And it's not just a planning exercise. It's actually our strategic growth system. We actually wrap around that advisory services that help them drive the execution of their strategic growth system. So we have a system that boils all the way down to a weekly meeting cadence against the execution of that plan.
Gotcha. And so this is more established companies have some sort of revenue right now and saying, hey, look, let's look at your leadership team. Let's look at what, you know, assets you have within the business, digital and or physical, and let's create a, and where do you want to go and what's your vision, and then help them, I guess, you know, lead them down the path, I should say.
Yeah, exactly. So we have a format to help them create the vision of where they're going, the long-term targets to get there, the strategy, the actual business strategy behind it. As well as the execution process.
Yeah, look, and I don't want to go off into a different tangent. There's actually a book here that I've got on my shelf called 24 Assets. It's by Dan Priestley. Very interesting little book, and it's around the similar thing that the diagnostics you just mentioned before. And I only bring that up. There's so many different bloody ways, but ultimately it's a way, and I do it in my company of every year, like stuff from, you know, if you're a legal firm having stock ready, operational agreements that you can pull off the shelf and you can sell to clients, and everywhere through to there's 24 assets you've got to assess yourself. But it sounds very similar to what you're doing, Jeff, in that you're constantly looking and assessing where businesses are in their growth and where they're deficient to continue to help them get to where they need to be across a lot of spectrums, right? Not just saying the physical assets, but, you know, leadership assets and IP and all that sort of stuff.
Mm-hmm. For sure. And once we do that assessment and we help them put that plan together and we work with them and throughout that process, we usually begin to observe, we always begin to observe what kind of culture they're creating. And we've actually built a cultural framework we call the culture of excellence, which really is six elements that we've observed that the companies that generate sustained strategic growth generally exhibit or focus on these six elements that cultivate that culture of excellence.
Do you want to quickly walk us through those six elements? 'Cause, yeah.
Yeah. Starts off with strong leadership. So a strong leadership team who they're bought into the direction of the company. They're bought into the strategy of the company. They're bought into the core values of the company, and they embody that on a day-to-day basis. Coupled with that, they create clarity and focus. So they know who they are, where they're going, how they're going to get there, and they ensure that every employee in the organization not only understands where the organization's going, but how they contribute in their individual roles to that direction as well. Then they have engaged and committed teammates. So employee engagement is a huge issue right now. Employee turnover is when someone quits and leaves. Employee disengagement is when they quit and stay. And some of the research suggests that if you take someone's fully loaded salary, disengagement increases the cost of that fully loaded salary from 35 to 50%. So disengagement's a huge issue. So that's individually competent people who are committed to the direction of the organization, who have clearly defined and accepted roles, and that's kind of what drives engagement. Empowering communication is another element. The word empower itself means to make someone stronger and more confident in dealing with the circumstances they're facing. So an organization that has a culture of empowering communication, when people talk to each other, when people give direction to one another, when people correct one another, they're doing so in a manner that that goes beyond just mutual support, respect, and encouragement. It moves to actually being empowering, making them stronger and more confident, even if it's a tough conversation. The fifth item is 100% accountability. And what that means is not only do I know precisely how my role contributes to the direction of the organization, I am accountable for that. I own that sandbox, and I know that anything that gets done in that sandbox is my responsibility unless I collaborate with someone else and we agree on how to divvy up those responsibilities. 100% accountability looks like this, Reed. If I owe you something by noon on Thursday, and I find out on Monday afternoon that I have a major client issue and it has put me at risk at being able to deliver that to you, I don't wait until Thursday when you ask me about it to then tell you that I can't do it. because I have all these reasons why I couldn't. I go to you immediately on Monday and say, is Thursday at noon a drop dead? And you may say, no, I've had some things that have gotten me off track. I'm not going to be able to do it until Monday. No harm, no foul. Everything's good. But if you say, yeah, not only is noon on Thursday a drop dead, I really could use it by 11:30 because I have a 1 o'clock client meeting that's dependent upon that. Then I have to immediately work with you to figure out how to reshuffle my priorities so that I can get you what you need by your drop dead. 100% accountability does that. It doesn't mean that you never change the expectation that's been set. It means that the moment at which you understand that you're at risk of doing what you said you're going to do, you go have a conversation with the dependent of that output.
Love it. Love it.
And then the last one is organizational agility. That's based on the great management philosopher Mike Tyson, who said everybody has a plan till he punches them in the mouth. And every entrepreneur, every business owner, every company executive has been punched in the mouth figuratively. They've had their day planned, they've had their week planned, they've had their year planned, and something came that punched them in the mouth. Strong organizations, strong leaders who build a culture of excellence not only foster individual resilience within the population of the company, but they foster organizational resilience and agility as well.
I absolutely love it. We, in our organization, we use a book which is just behind me, Traction, which I'm sure you've heard. Yep. You know, there's so many different elements out there. Like, Traction's very good at laying the foundation, but like what you've just mentioned just there about accountability, it doesn't really go into that as much, right?
If you were to look at our strategic growth system, you would see that it is a little bit Traction, a little bit Scaling Up by Vern Harnish, a little bit of The Advantage by Patrick Lencioni, a little bit of Good to Great. So it's got elements of all of those aspects in it.
Who not hows over here?
Yep, for sure.
You know,
for sure.
But I think at the end of the day, what you're getting at is, like, it does start. And I know because I've implemented my company, right? Anywhere you go as an organization, as a leader, you have to take responsibility that, particularly in this space, which you probably have seen a lot of, one-man bands or solo entrepreneurs into growing into having employees and having a structure below them, right?
Mm-hmm.
And
that's
it's
right.
So hard to let the vine go. It's so hard to have the accountability. But, like, talking about accountability and engagement and clarity starts with having people around you and then empowering them to, like, it's nearly like I always hear the word come to my mind is, like, I want to shine the light on my employees or shine the light on the other team members to lift them up, to make them want to, you know, paying them a salary is real all well and good and getting compensation is all well and good. But having that, I want to, you know, the disengagement score you just mentioned.
That's right.
When you lose that, that's a reflection of the leaders in the company because they haven't built out these, you know, 6-7 steps, whether it's Traction, whether it's, you know, whatever it is. But then keeping to it, right? Not just going, this is a one good idea. 6 months later, we're not freaking doing it at all. It's keeping it. So how do you see in the, you know, your world, do you implement your strategy? And is it an ongoing basis, I would assume? It's an ongoing check-in on all these sort of elements?
It is. And that's why we call it the strategic growth system is it takes about 90 days for a team to get off track from a strategic growth plan that they've built, unless you have something that brings them back every 90 days to revisit. So we look at Traction calls it rocks. He actually borrowed that. Geno Wickman borrowed that from Stephen Covey, who originally used the term rocks. We call them quarterly priorities. And so what are the things if your long-term targets are the strategic goals that you need to accomplish in order to get to where you said you're going to get in the next 3 years, your short-term goals are the things that you need to focus on in the next 12 months, and your quarterly priorities are the things you need to do in the next 90 days to get you at least a fourth of the way to those short-term goals.
Yep.
And so then there's a weekly meeting cadence followed by a quarterly check-in as well.
We use what's called a level 10 on our Monday morning meetings, make sure everyone, you know,
I'm familiar with that for sure.
So, Hey guys, this is a quick ad for our latest multifamily investment opportunity called the Avalon Apartments, located in Dallas, Texas, the fastest growing MSA in the nation. Now, rapid fire, here are the three reasons why we love this asset. Firstly, great investor returns of over 20% annualized. The second thing, of the 226 units, 30% have already been renovated and they're achieving a $250 rental premium. Now, our business plan is pretty simple. We'll come in and renovate the remaining 70% to achieve those proven rental levels, then rely on a modest 3% rent growth thereafter. It's very conservative, very straightforward, and the same thing we have been doing successfully for over a decade. Now, last thing, pricing for multifamily apartment properties have fallen more today than they did during the 2008 global financial crisis. This could very well be the best time in commercial real estate cycle to pick up cheap assets. If you're interested to find out more, click on the link below. Mm-hmm. I think what we're getting for the listeners is that like this isn't just fluff, right? This isn't just BS. It's tried and true. There's systems out there. There's people like Jeff who can guide you. And at the end of the day, if you're a leader listening to this podcast, it's what resonates with you, right? All these systems are really, really good, but they're only as good as the implementation and how you're going to follow up. And we can give all the fancy words and acronyms and all that crap, but you know, unless you take responsibility as the leader of the company, you've got to be able to do that. Just to wrap up on that, you know, we'll ask at the end of the show where people can reach you. But you mentioned earlier that anyone can come along and just hey Jeff, I want to pick your brain. I want to consult with. Mm-hmm. Where's the ideal client in your mind as they approach you and say, I need a bit of help?
Well, so on the innovation junkie side of the house, which is pretty much global, the entrepreneurial support side is funded specifically for the state of Arkansas. So all of that funded work is for our Arkansas-based entrepreneurs. They come to us at all levels. On the innovation junkie side, it's usually somewhere between 10 and $250 million of annualized revenue. Now, we serve companies that are even, you know, 500 million, and we serve divisions of some very large multi-billion dollar corporations. Generally, the larger companies that we're working with are coming to us for some of our innovation expertise, helping them to really look at their products and services, look at the way they do business, and helping them innovate. And so it really, you know, back in that tech or tech-enabled space, advanced manufacturing, we do some work there, and we do quite a bit of work in healthcare as well.
Gotcha. And people below 10 million, because a lot of the listeners on this show would be probably in that sub $10 million range. Yeah. I'm sure that no harm, no foul, coming giving you a knock on the door.
No, we work with a number that are, you know, that are in the what I'd call the $3 to $10 million range for some specific services. So absolutely.
Oh, fantastic. Quick, as we pivot towards the end of the show, my curiosity brain from you providing this service, and you mentioned Cadron Capital earlier. Yeah. Did I pronounce that correctly?
Cadron Capital.
It would have been. It's an interesting play there. Walk me through. Like, was it the chicken or the egg? Like, did you have the service to help with the innovation junkie and the services of providing that platform for people to grow to then allow an investment platform to spur from that, because people are saying, hey, look, I need capital. You've taught me all these great things, but I need the money to bloody go out and do it.
Yeah, it started with the entrepreneurial support organization. So the startup junkie conductor that was the funded services that we provide to Arkansas-based entrepreneurs. That's how it got started. And then from that, my business partners up in Northwest Arkansas and we each had our own funds. And we merged those together and created Cadron Capital Partners in about 2019. And we're relatively small on the investment side. We generally consider ourselves as strategic followers. Mm-hmm. So our first fund, we did some pre-revenue stuff. We don't do a lot of pre-revenue stuff now. In fact, we try to stay away from pre-revenue. We're generally looking at companies that are in the annual recurring revenue range of, you know, couple of million dollars, if they're SaaS related, if they're a product or service related, you know, maybe a little more than that, rapidly growing and, with a strong management team, obviously, and clearly scalable. And that's what we're looking at.
Yep. No, it's so interesting. As a leader myself, you know, I've been in the multifamily space for so many years. It's now looking at M&A actually, mm-hmm, looking at existing companies and using the same skills that we've developed in manipulating net operating income marketing and building culture and all that stuff. And you can, the widget that I've been doing for the last 10 years, 15 years is housing, right? You know, how do you shift that into services or products or stuff like that? It's all so, I love this stuff. I love being able to go in and talk to people, particularly on the investment level, where you get someone who's really passionate about their product, their great management team. And it seems like you've got the really good balance of not only providing a platform to help them maybe grow and have different ideas about their leadership, but then be like, hey, you know what? We've got some investments on this side that could help you achieve that. Does it ever cross?
Yeah, for sure. And because we're not traditional consultants, we have been in and out of startups ourselves. We have been in and out of large companies ourselves. So we're operators first. We're also investors. So we've written, you know, millions of dollars in checks over the years, and we're advisors. So we work with private equity firms a lot of times as well, who will bring us in to work with their portfolio companies. And talking about real estate, there's actually some really cool startup real estate investment platforms I'm sure you're aware of out there today. You know, Arrived Homes out of Seattle, which is for rental, single family rental properties, where, you know, you can buy a fractional portion of that through an investment plan. Acre Trader, which is farmland and wooded territories, wooded land. That's here in based in Arkansas, up in Northwest Arkansas. Some really cool real estate investment platforms that we've had the opportunities to work with as well.
You know, real estate SaaS is, you know, I remember 10 years ago starting and getting someone to sign a PPM through DocuSign was the most innovative thing. And now today everyone's got a goddamn bloody portal. And, you know, oh, which portal am I on with your investment? You know, like, and then there's fractional ownership. And it's all spurred from the Jobs Act in 2012. And, you know, but real estate in general has been the old clunky dinosaur that didn't have a lot of SaaS, and now it feels like there's just so much SaaS involved. I was getting pitched the other day about SaaS, and I'm like, God, as a real estate investment company, it seems like I need six figures of just bloody SaaS all the time. You know, it's just like I'm getting to the point. It's like it's too much. Time out. Then we've got to bulk SaaS right now. So great stuff. Look, as we wind up the end of the show, what's the goal for you over the next 12 to 18 months? I'm sure you've probably had a bit of a slowdown yourself. You know, given where we are and a lot, in terms of inflation and where interest rates are at. But are you seeing the tables turn and you got some more optimism on the horizon as you look at new companies?
I do have some optimism out there. The market and the economy doesn't always run parallel to one another. It's interesting when the real estate market is running well and the traditional public markets are doing well, it's hard to find investors for some of these alternative asset classes like venture funding and private equity. Because, you know, why take the added risk when the market's flying or the real estate's flying or what have you? And so they're good and bads on both sides. But, you know, we've got a steady pipeline of prospects coming through for our venture fund. And we're excited about that. We'll probably be starting another fund probably in mid-2025, I suspect. You know, there's a real interesting dynamic happening out there today where about 50% of all companies. First of all, when we talk about small businesses, we're talking about 99% of all employers in the United States. Mm-hmm. 99%. They're responsible for 50% of all employees. And so if you just watch CNBC, you're just going to see the ones that are on the, you know, you're just going to hear about 1% of the population of companies. But about of those 99% of employers, small businesses, about 50% of them are owned by people 55 years of age and older. 10,000 of them are retiring every single day.
Yep.
And the past data suggests that if they retire and sell their business, if they were the founder generation of that business and they sell it to the second generation, regardless of whether it's in the family or outside the family, just the second generation of owner, about 74% of those will fail. Mm-hmm. Because the business has been built around the cult of personality of that founder. Yep. And that's a huge issue in terms of the potential job loss and economic impact just at the macro level. But it's also a huge opportunity for what I would think would be a kind of a new breed of private equity funds to come along and roll up some of those companies and help them succeed. And so big financial opportunity there as well. So I'm bullish on that opportunity over the course of the next few years.
I couldn't I couldn't echo your sentiments any further. From that, that I completely agree as well. We're actually starting a different venture to our capital raising arm outside of real estate because of that exact thing.
Very good.
You know, finding great operators in certain, we're targeting more CPA firms, insurance companies, actually,
sure.
Wealth management firms,
yep.
and bolting them on and letting people, you know, the roll-up strategy. So sure. Very interesting. I'll have to get back in a year's time or something. I'll have to chat and see how that all pans out. So, but Jeff, at the end of the show, we love to do the top five investing tips. You ready to get into it?
Sure.
Mate, question number one is, what's the daily habit that you practice to keep on track towards your goals?
The daily habit, every day I get up and I flip across a couple of different financial channels and I keep them running in my office. So I'm looking at CNBC, I'm looking at Bloomberg, and I'm looking at Fox Business.
Gotcha.
And I'm watching across all of those. I'm looking at the market, I'm looking at economic indicators, and I do that literally every single day.
Love it. Love it. Question number two is, who's been the most successful? Who's been the most influential person in your career to date?
There have been several, but I have to say, you know, and this is going to sound goofy, but I have to say my mother. You know, she'll be 82 years old in November.
Bless
she
her.
Still works. She still works. Works for a bank and actually runs kind of the senior business development office for seniors and does travel trips with them and what have you. And she's decided that she wants to work for a couple more years. And so, you know,
that's
then
great.
She's going to think about retiring. She actually has two jobs. She does that and she's a part-time real estate agent.
God, she is crushing it at 82. I think if we're doing half what she's doing at that age, we'll be
exactly.
very successful. So
exactly.
Awesome to Jeff's mom. Question number three is, what's the most influential tool in your business? And when I say tool, it could be a physical tool like a journal or a phone, or it could be a piece of software that you just can't run the business without. What is it?
You know, I would have said up until a few years ago that it was a journal and I wrote everything down. Now I actually use a note-taking app on my iPad for that, and it's still vitally important. My calendar, my Apple calendar. But most recently, I use ChatGPT almost every single day and other AI tools.
That's awesome. That's awesome, mate. Question number four is, one sentence, what's been the biggest failure in your career? What did you learn from that failure?
So I told you about buying that business straight out of college. Now, I didn't work in that business. So I was a paramedic and a respiratory therapist on a helicopter team for Arkansas Children's Hospital. So I literally worked 7 days on, 7 days off. So I thought that I could buy this business, hire someone to run it for me, and then I could just pop in down there every 2 weeks and check on it and make sure everything's good. And I learned a ton there. Number one, I learned that no one will run your business like you run your business, that you have to have systems and processes in place, not just good intentions. Number two, I learned that compensation has an effect on people's behavior, and you can pay someone too much in a guaranteed salary, and that really saps their motivation to go above and beyond. And so I did that. I paid too much, and I paid more than this young gentleman had ever made in his career in personal salary. And so he wasn't motivated to do the extra work to earn additional commissions. And then I learned that, you know, there is an alternative to bankruptcy. You can just look the banker in the eye and say, I can't pay you today, but I will pay you back. And he said, well, how much can you pay a month? And I told him, and he said, then I'll get you a payment book. And so for the next 10 years, I paid off that debt, which I just chalked it up to tuition to business school.
Mm. Yeah. Wow. I'm sure we could have a whole freaking episode just on that that story just there. No, I love it. Well, Jeff, you've been such a wealth of knowledge. The last question is, where can people reach you to continue the conversation?
I'm very active on LinkedIn. Again, my name's Jeff Standridge, and that's my handle on LinkedIn. I also have a website, jeffstandridge.com. And if they want to reach out to me directly via email, jeffs@innovationjunkie.com.
Gotcha, mate. Well, look, I want to thank you so much for taking some time out of your day. Just want to reflect some of the things that I took away from today's show. I think it's just hearing that last story and your evolution and just mentioning that you're a ENT on a helicopter.
EMT,
and then you were in the business, and now you're evolving. It's, you know, your constant evolution. And actually, now that I know your mum's story, I can see where I know where you get it from. But just having that ability to create a platform where you're helping businesses, but then helping them potentially be startups. But investment platform as well. And yep. You can't have one without the other. Money can only go so far. I think is so important, and it is the fundamentals to whatever we do. Is building culture and your six elements of success. I think is super fundamental to what you do and how you breed success over the long term. And some of those stories there, like no one will ever run your business like you run your business. I completely agree with that. Like the idea on paper of buying a business and hiring a CEO to do it is just not going to be the same as someone else. So
that's right.
Mate, did I leave anything out there or we want to add anything before we wrap up the show?
That's it. Awesome, Reed. Thank you so much for having me. I appreciate what you do, and it's been a pleasure to be with you and your listeners.
Mate, awesome stuff. Enjoy the rest of your week and we'll catch up very, very soon.
Sounds good. See ya.
Well, there you have it. Another cracking episode jam-packed with some incredible advice from Jeff. Remember, if you want to check him out, it's at jeffstanbridge.com. You can also check it out, jeffs@innovationjunkie.com. He's all over LinkedIn. Check him out. All the links from today's show notes will be up on our website at reedgoosens.com. Remember, the easiest way to give back to this show is give it a 5-star review or tell your friends about it. We love to share the message. We've been going for a decade on this show. Keep the message going. We're going to do this all again next week. So remember, be bold, be brave, and go give life a crack.